In the whole of the USA, the population is approaching 200 million. So some of it in Australia. Failing or left in America, but a lot in Sydney. What's that level with the Super Trigger and things? Let me show you this slightly more graphically. Another three ways of looking at the same touch. The frozen stock, 25% more decimated atoms than the entire American population. On average, in Australia, it's 20 times more likely to see the decimation than in America. Sydney alone sees a level of decimation in the Asian equivalent to about 60% of our energy levels. Now, some of those figures are estimates. I can't add to the US figure of 110. But even if it's added by 3 times, it means by 4 times, including extra contributors, as to how this country compares with Britain and America. Now, what's going on? A lot of you probably have worked it out already. Something called the First Amendment. In the reading words of the American Constitution, Congress has passed no law affecting the freedom of speech or of the press. The case that applies that principle to American defamation court law is this one called Polon and New York Times. And this is a brief summary of the thing. Plaintiffs who are public figures, and this is very liberal in this purpose, it's not that difficult to be a public figure, must prove actual knowledge. Actual knowledge normally means that you have to prove that the media either knew that what they were publishing was false, or they were reckless, or the press reference to the reckless. That's a false thing. The Australian position, generally the defendants, that's supposed to be a good media, have to prove actual truth. Now, this is a basic concept that you should try and keep in mind throughout what I'm saying. You've got the American position where the central tension is on the behavior of the media. What does the media do? What care do they take for their reports? How do they, what the fact checking and so on? That's the American position. The Australian position is not so much what the media is, although they're talking about, but it's who can prove truth. Now, defamation law, you know, we talk about it in teaching life, which got the right to treatment of depression, versus the right to reputation. You have to think about how we characterize that right to treatment of expression. Of course, we've got the right to tell the truth. I mean, it's a big deal, right, for that. We've got what the trade is saying is you've got the right to tell the truth. You've got the right to tell the truth, provided you can prove it. And you think, well, that's not a great liberty either. Whereas America is giving it much greater liberty. I regard it as their interpretation of freedom of expression, the freedom to make a statement, the freedom for the media to occasionally get it wrong, the freedom for the media to research stories, behave upon them, they have to behave upon them. But to collect stories, which they believe to be true on reasonable levels, that is how they interpret freedom of expression. That's how I might see things in this country also. There are a couple of exceptions to the rather basic stringent rule about defendants having to prove actual truth. The first is the one that I'm on board with, it's the distinction between statements of opinion and you're entitled to an expression of opinion on subjective matters. Again, I said, well, 50 or more like that. But also the defense of privilege. And this is where the big battleground would be in defamation law. Most of you will know about this concept of privilege. It's where MPs and consultants in Parliament say what they like without being sued, and then apply for court proceedings. And it also extends to the media, and it extends to the media as long as what has to do with it is a fair and accurate report of what happens in court. Or what happens in Parliament. So you can see in a way it's moving towards the American system. It's looking not so much at the truth of the publication, but the asking this is what care does to be given. This gives me a wonderful excuse, by the way, to share this with you what I think is the greatest apology in the show of this is. I don't know anything about the background to this, but I hope it's apology. Alderman Murray Hammond of Leichhardt Council, Alderman Bertelli of the Council, etc. I'm going to ask these actors to tell them that they'll show. Not take them on your own. This comparison between America and Britain, sorry, between America and Australia, interesting as it is, explains the Dudley case, which I suspect you'll talk about earlier. Dudley case is the media background. It was an attempt by an American to sue, sorry, it was an attempt by Joe Dudley, but Joe Dudley managed to sue an American publication on the question of what were to apply American defamation law or Australian defamation law. They write that it's sort of cartoon, and because the picture, as you probably know, was from the Australian, the decision was taken that wherever you are in the country, if you publish anything on the internet, you can be sued under Australian law. Now, one of them, So most of them settle, as you can expect, but most of the time would sometimes agree with you. In fact, 49% settle, or formally settle, a mere 21% likely yes to trial. Percentage of formal settlements where the defendant is known to have faced damages is 53%, which is actually far higher than the judiciary choice by number. Median amount of settlements consumed on loan is $10,000. The total, this is interesting, 268% of cases, payment value is 32% of cases. Average damages is 44,000. And recent research suggests that our settlements have significantly changed from those figures obtained in 1991. So I want to go through a few examples because, as I said, I believe the definition of law should be based on the performance of the media, the behavior of the media. That's not to say the media doesn't make some stupid mistakes. You wouldn't believe the number of definite matches that arrive at the photograph. The photograph is a trigger for the newspaper because they can never quite connect the photograph to the story. This is an article, straight from the Daily Telegraph, called the 1999. So I'm 365 days in prison, applied for the 11 days of luxury. If you regard to Justin, it says here, was living beyond the means and struggling to keep people other pieces afloat, and the $650,000 child is signed up for him. You would assume that that's Chief Justin. You'll probably particularly know now that it's not Chief Justin. Here's the apology, it follows the brain. Apology to Chief Justin inadvertently opposes with the brain of him. Here's another example of the child for the problem arising. And I'm not sure it's another story. This is joining three on very fast train, it says down here. The state and federal government and the private sector were yesterday able to work together to make a very fast plane project a reality. The chairman of the committee for Melbourne, Mr. Jack Morgan, and the committee for city council, Mr. Rob McGill, the leverage. So he continues, of course, again, you can probably see what happened here. The story above that, the chamber on the bomb, the So again, the issue is always to what extent, I mean, what extent, what boundary affects the media. This is a wonderful example of how even outputs the advisor defamation action. Taken from the other world, I should note for reading of 1799, now the letter of Hooker, property for sale, that Hooker was wrong, David Churchill, around successful sales team. Today you can be contacted on 0417448252. What could be wrong with that? We should be so paid to be escorted and have all the
Thank you.
somebody capitalizing billion numbers and making the point that perhaps there are some people coming, some people here from not being happy, or is it more likely to be suggesting the falling count of you in fact are not all of us a homosexual man? If you take, for instance, four Queensland judges now from my breakfast chance that it's unanimously the latter, the four couldn't even see the possibility that there's a date as to whether that's what that means. It was absolutely clear that there's only one thing. Falling Hampton is fundamental to the homosexual man. I wonder how they get on in prison as well. I know we all know that about race, although I shouldn't pick up defamation law for this part of it, but it is tempting to walk on a kick and then down when there's a representative of the judiciary here, I think. Another bad time with this plane of photograph, which I'm sort of rather nervous about showing too much because as a class church, and you'll understand why. A certain footballer by the name of Nicky Hamilton, while photographed after a game in the shower, that is probably reasonable to show. I'm just working my way down a little bit more. But there is a point at which he will be exposed to ridicule, and which I won't dare go any further. Why on earth the law should protect, why the Reformation law should protect somebody from ridicule? I mean, it's not okay. We can have a situation where people are protected from untrue reports about themselves. Why ridicule? It's a difference. Sort of leads me on to this thing. This is a wonderful instance from the Tom Herald recently in the Naked City column. This is a photograph of a man, as you can see, crucified with a camel in Hyde Park. The story below says, solicitor laid down the law. Not some of those laid because we're going to get elected tragedy. It's the lawyer Rob Kelly in Hyde Park. Practicing his piano correspondence display at the start of this year's true performance at the Jerry Lesbian Market Art. Kelly, the Queensland Performing Arts Chairman, is a senior partner of the law firm Gaylord, truly, demonstrated with today's anti-war march statement, how much love of the people dying. Now, you can hear, I mean, it's perfectly cool that it's all got happening. There's two of Kelly, happy to say. One of them was struck to the piano in Hyde Park, the was a senior partner. So he walked down the incredible apology and returned from that. Published a piano and accompanied in photograph, I think, in the following sentence, it's Bob Kelly, the control of the apology. But the person was so good with that, depicted in the photograph, is not Mr. Kelly, nor is Mr. Kelly, in any way associated with that person. But somehow the apologizer is Mr. Kelly, and his family. The question that occurs to me here is, what the hell is wrong with tying yourself to a camel in Hyde Park? I mean, most of us have some idea of what senior partners are like in big law firms. I don't know anything about Mr. Bob Kelly, if I own an apology, if he's part of the interesting life, but most of us will probably be very interested in their advertising. Why are we really going to think less of somebody for that? This is what brings us to the conflict of the law has, because defamation isn't just about protecting reputation. Defamation is also about deciding who is included and who is excluded. I'm not sure what regard is involved in this. Defamation law, putting the parameters around deciding what is acceptable and unacceptable behaviour. Well, my view that it's a big fine, even for a lawyer, and I'm a lawyer, decide myself a camel, no ordinary reasonable person would think that. But an important aspect of this case is that it brings it what the famous Old Testament to, which is a great point in the name now, which is quite what I call my third project in effect, quite dangerous. This is the final truth of favor from this day. This point has come in and out of court for many years. In 2000, it was decided by the Justice Bell that it brought them to the way that you did that, you would see why I put this up. This is what the law uses as a standard to decide who is in an act that they contest for community or they're talking about. The ordinary reasonable person. This is the moral standard of the law. It's a tricky term, isn't it? Because there's obviously two words, but they're all reasonable. Some people might come to this same here and just for apologies, might do the second word is completely redundant, is unnecessary, and being the same as the first. Other people who perhaps regard themselves as slightly more outside the mainstream might say it's complete oxymoron, and might say those two words are completely incompatible. Or there'll be others in the middle who sometimes say ordinary people is reasonable, sometimes true, ordinary people is unreasonable. What Justice Bell did in the case of Rifkin was to basically use this word to say what standards are being set in our present society as to what is reasonable, what is not reasonable behavior. She particularly looked at the anti-discrimination laws against homosexuality, the anti-discrimination laws against homosexuality, to say the fact is that certain moral, normative standards, which we as a community are deciding not to go beyond. That is what defines the moral community. That is what defines the ordinary, reasonable community. Therefore, it's not even capable of this country to call somebody homosexual. That, in my mind, is an extremely important statement for the law to make. The law does a great deal to shape normative ideology in the country. It's very important. Even if Patrick's pen of not compensating people, happy heterosexuals, or happily married heterosexuals, or whatever they were telling heterosexuals, even at the expense of not compensating some person for a publication that is heterosexual, it is better to bear that help than for the law to reinforce a dominant ideology which is heterosexual, which is homophobic. That, unfortunately, was reversed by the High Court Cano case that I just showed you, by the Dean, who again has opened the door to the suggestion that it's the family of your political contractual. So what I'm essentially doing in my research is trying to map out how the public understand this term for the reasonable person. You have a choice. You either ask the law to do technicality, to try to work out what standard society accepts and fills up those, or you apply what you perceive as the standard of the ordinary person to be. Regardless of the more moral consensus of law that society might have been, if you go out and say what do people actually think. The danger of doing the latter is that you're exposed to something called a third person effect. Third person effect is the belief that most people have that they're smart than everybody else. We've all got. Otherwise, why would you be here tonight? So, you know, it's the belief that, and if you ask, is it the belief that you will always seem to find you better than anybody else? If you ask, so the belief of your brother to the Jewish is that the Jewish system will always misinterpret actual objective societal values and will unequal overestimate importance of society, and thus in turn leads to finding this person. So that's what my research is essentially about.
That's my half hour. Yes. Well, thank you very much for that very important discussion. And you'll have plenty of opportunity to ask him for any elaboration on anything to spend or to question anything, because after Stephen's speech and discussion. Now, before that, let me introduce Stephen Lane, who is the editor of Crikey.com.au, and he has in fact been served on three occasions for defamation. So he's most famous with the basic defamation law and has both been So litigation is free for the last 110 days. And presumably you want to keep that one. So please, I'll welcome Stephen Lynch.
Thank you for coming and the opportunity to speak. I'm not concerned about are there any lawyers in the audience? Seven rounds of lawyers?
No.
Okay. Anyone about claims in the audience? No. Okay. Evan's going to take that from the old here, so we're on the record. So that by the bank, I'm going to Bruce will get sued as well. I'd like to cover a few areas from the law of life. And I am not receiving $1,000 from them. to cover my travel costs to and from the UK. The second one was at St. Croix. I've just been drafted from the rectorship at the CUE. It was a bit complicated. He called me a prepaid, an idiot, and a girl that some of them were being conservative at the bottom of the gun. During the Victorian election campaign, the night of that crowd was being just and they can be stopped and just over a long period of time. So we had four. I then had a few company at the meeting, and I said to him, and I said to him, and I said, you're all stopped on camp, the crew was down camp, and had a labour sort of the government, and he then went to another and saw on air that day, and he didn't even come to AGM today. So we had four. So you can hit you there. Now this is a real prayer and step on my part.
The proceeds of the house,
that causes huge PR issue, and our revenue is from 10,000 a month to 30,000 a month, and we've got that. And then thank God, he got Alan Jones gig in Sydney, and he started in Sydney 2 weeks before our 5 day trial was about to start. Now there was no way that he was going to leave Sydney when he was just starting up head to head with Alan Jones, and run a 5 day transport trial in some 2 blocks back garden network. We love the guy. He only throws $40,000 of our half proceeds of the equity of $110,000. So he said he is $70,000 a year. The price he knew that $70,000 was a cattle breach. So we offered him $50,000 and he took it straight away. So he spent $170,000 and got the $50,000. He lost our house, but our revenues went up from $10,000 to $30,000 a month. And there's a misconception that Christ would like to include because we see as a marketing exception. Nick Baldwin was an exile student, again, another classic suffer on our behalf. He came into Seattle and dealt with exile with a famous street driver's bill. And the actual words were Nick Baldwin, and under headline, famous street driver's bill. Nick Baldwin. How long do I have a Baldwin? Hit a tree in Camberwell in 1996, but the public record shows that it was driven by a disclosure and wouldn't get a threat from the public record. So why would he invite his name on the list under a street price? Anyway, maybe we could argue away out of it, but then he wrote in and said, give us an apology, and he took it off the site, gave him an apology, and then it was sort of up in the air. And then that son got done with street driving, so I've read the record, it's been privately. The stupid me hadn't amended it on the word document. I only amended it directly on the site, so I re-published it. And then political volunteers were able to tell me we had a picture of Bin Laden next to Osama Bin Laden. And it didn't say Bin Laden didn't drink it, but rain water. Because he then said, you've re-published it, you've put my client's picture next to Osama Bin Laden down our feet. So we turned up to Richard to throw the third article, the second book phone, writing two novels, and the third is now taken up and paid as long. So I was doing an interview, he was thrown at the boat, he had been detained, and he had it. So now I sort of went through the whole thing, twice being thrown to the top door, but he was very hard after that, and he demanded 50,000 up to just walk out house, and he was quite 50,000, he wouldn't come at all. They played very tough. He got 40,000 out of town service in 1992, and Dennis Brown said, involved in a post-budget hunt-up on C5 Doesn't Know Life, which he hadn't been. So he had a taste of the tax $3, and he was another place. And so the next week, this was going to go to court, and I got the most magnificent piece of dirt that you could ever get. And I had to thank my lawyer over it, because it's, I won't go into details, but my lawyer was massively and sensationally convinced. So I sent my lawyer without telling him why it was that, and then I wrote the bottom and said, I've just discovered this. Wow. Please keep the credit and the credit extensions. I haven't told my lawyer about this, but so I'm telling you. But now it's a deal with me record. So he knew I had an amazing thing to do. He wasn't going to be inclined to go to court for risk taking run, even though things were pretty narrow and we were going to have to struggle to get the law if he had no reputation up with an insurance file or offence. He said, this guy's no reputation. But if you do that, you massively magnify the damages because you're being very, very sort of aggressive and provocative. So you can think you can run all the stuff in court, but you'll probably go down and have to screen your neck. At the end of the day, I don't want to get bankrupt, but I still want to run the board with the shareholder activists. In America, it's a bit of a bad environment, but you had to go, and Australia being bankrupt is still quite an unfortunate thing. So the last one I want was that. So I went to my advocate capacity to tell. $25,000, and our revenues went from $90,000 in May, in April, to $50,000 in May. Then we had a big fundraiser and we sold another 50 last month. That's $500. Right. So again, since we had public service again, we had pricing of us getting sued for the inflation of business. So I had another risk of three and 4 years to have it at chess.com and Andy Kemper. He's not going to be rich, because there's other people out there. I'm still thinking, he's only going to have 28 years. Mark Redfield, I think, has got 4 outstanding at the moment on the track. And Alan Bell's still going in hard because of the Indian game. Solomon Lynn's going in. I think Jeff Hill's going in with the Harry Bird. Former managing director, I think, Coronet is going on his father. So he's top of the year and probably 20 over the years. He's definitely quite open about playing with most students. You've got to get the ground and aware of Phil Dickey and Queensland Inc. and Moonlight State and all that he went through. So Tony's record, despite the session, is actually quite long. And that's because we now have a very, very vigorous and rigorous corrections policy. And the first sign of trouble, we do backflips and we roll and we hold them. And the great thing about the word is that you can fix it quickly. And, it's amazing how many people like them to complain and say, please take this banner off the website. And I don't understand that I've actually emailed people. You write someone writing on the newspaper and saying, please go out into every household and destroy every newspaper you can. You can't do it. You can't unpublish it. Well, the first, you can republish the exact same 5,000 people. And you know, what I'll often do is if I frame someone in item number 16, and if it's a bad one, I'll then correct it in item number 4. So I'll say, the correction, unlike newspapers, when buildings are where the corrections are often buried, we go out our way and make sure they're more of the decorative and they're more prominent. So it creates a perception. Everything is bad, it creates a perception that you're really inaccurate. Allows people like Chris Murdoch, Tim Bob, Andrew Bush, and the old record, the same as Australia's most inaccurate journal. But it's just a way of mitigating litigation. It's complete litigation is mitigation. And it's worth a chance. So you can see how completely balled up this fight and bothered. And the trick of the block is, and Derek is a son, he doesn't know what to do with the cowboy, and he knows that what is a disaster financially. And family wise, lose the house, very stressful, distraction from the core publishing sort of operation. So now, I've actually got pretty good intelligence, and I'm getting the tips often before the risk land, before the federal land. So they've got the tips that had to stop the oil and had to do, because they're recording her past statement, which is in fact that. People can see quite a lot. I know it's been quite a lot of business. Rob Durbin went to him and take a look at him. He was seen as an advocate for the same crisis, but Adrian Anderson. And finally, he is a part. And well, the things that the cancer beyond the form of fat label, we're about to sue. And so I need to announce that we're going to be nice to Natasha, and we weren't going to call her our fat anymore, and we've been in the past, and we're going to now all correct the suits and life. And she's in the issue. And there's a number of other examples like that, but the outgoing deputy president of the Liberal Party story, I've got a call from a lawyer saying, I've just got this right back, and I'm conflicted about the issue. So, again, got the information out there quickly. Said he wasn't, said he probably would have acted on a great reputation. Someone sits us up in the Labor Party and that kind of a really, really sorry and good right. And you can see. So I've found that some past experience on the web, so that's actually been a very effective strategy. Now, I'd just like to run you through a few names of the powerful people over the years in Australia who have used the defamation law often to the good effect. Brian Kennedy, formerly Dale, Cause for the Grand Coal Fire. Roger Robinson got 30,000 out of 60 million. Roger Connell, I think he should have a couple of hundred business on the day. Alan Bond, African, Peter Abel, the Mr. Lino on the Nafia family since 2017, 8 years going out for 4 months and the six masters. Jim Cairns, Michael Brennan, the National Front, Hanson, Scott Loon, Jeff Kennedy, Eddie O'Dea, Eddie McGuire, David Oldfield, Renee Wilson, Shane Warne, Ron Walker, Lloyd Williams, the colourful casinos, entrepreneurs, and all, Nick Whitman, and Neville Rank. Now that's a pretty interesting list. But what I find more interesting is that the two categories of people that most inclined to promote them are politicians and people in the media. And quite a lot of them have the same experience in the UK. They've been sued by journalists more than any other person. And this, I would argue, is the oldest problem. The journalists have the ability to hit back. I have probably actually one of the most defamed people in Australia. I've probably got the biggest enemy list. The most impressive enemy list in Australia. Just think about some of the things that people have said. Wouldn't cross the street if you were in that chamber, let alone a bitch.
This committee might help our having working against the interests of shareholders rather than form them. Seems right, but then it proves that we need to fill the trees and trees as well as we can. I think it's more about Australia than an accurate journal. Solomon Lou, I don't describe it all as rubbish. So, he's had about 1 point down and separated the birth of me and the slave had to fill in the place of George Harrison. So, that's called your professional colour motor. Anyway, this is going to recognise that I've started a motor collector. Here at Hackett's Arms, I'm really referring to the adventure or the supernatural. It's a cat lady, so I've got a good fiction story. But I mean, it's a horror, because I'm in the same business, because I'm out there having a go at everyone as well. And I've got to be pretty fast, so when I get someone having a go at me, I don't sue them, so I just have a go back on my website, and I'm ready. I've actually got probably too many rents in a way. And a lot of people don't sort of kick out of the beehive is the analogy that some people use, because it's not worth getting slammed on Friday on an email list that goes to 12,000 people. So they don't pick the fight first, and they do pick the fight, I can be passed. So I've got a policy in this room. And there are sadly not many people who have that same policy. Like Rupert Murdoch, who has a policy, and John Howard, to their credit, both have a policy in not suing. But think about these media people who have sued over the last years. Tony Bell, the chief executive of Southern Cross Broadcast, the man who runs all the chalk shops in Australia, created quite a nice shop at Darren Hinch. Hands-on wild approach. Richard Carlton, of course, he was getting lots of support. Mark Barrett, at least he said he regretted it. Former true proprietor, doing so much defamation is amazing. Alan Arons, the gentleman who's doing the most, I think he's on trial against it. He's followed by Ken Price and Warwick. Here's the most abusive journalist in Melbourne, it's all very conscious in the country for a while, I think. Peter Bluntley, who the Herald Sun, to John Payne from the ABC, Neil Mitchell, to the Company of the AFC as well, Peter Boucherman, Harry Nichols, to the Big Five, Karen Bell, of course, she's a columnist in the ABC, says a lot. Richard Stream, got 300,000, the SPGB, got 300,000 on New York, and Mark Westfield, doing one of these survivors on land council. So that's pretty diverting, and people in the media get tried on the TV to hate the defamation laws, to then go out and abuse the defamation laws. And how does that agree with the politicians? And I say that the two groups are in it together. These are the politicians who are going to cash out the defamation. Bob Hall, Nick Boswell, Stella Boxer, Neville Aaron, Bob Aston, Jim Tan, Neil Bloom, Adam Costello, Nick Benathon, who's in South Australia. Wheeler, Ken Smith, the old science minister of Victoria, Eddie O'Neill, Mike Brown, a couple of gentlemen, John Kendall, the student paid by up here, John Hummey, Jeff Kennedy, Reed Kennedy, Officer and Nelson, Andy Steve, David Oldfield, Paul Gibbs, Randy from New Zealand, and Noel Crossman, Michael Danny, Arthur Paul, Joe Representative, was about 20 years, Robin Cavalier, I haven't finished out how it was Maureen Kennedy, and Peter Duncan. So it was a pretty sad impression that none of them actually come out, and there could have been two substantial elements there. First of all, the famous Theophilus case, where qualified privilege was firmly established by the High Court, with Dean leading the way, Dean is not a great champion for free speech, and then got watered down in the subsequent long case, a couple of years later, long to Four Corners, and even miraculously actually wrote to all major media companies in Australia asking them to contribute to a defamation payment for him because he knew he was about to water down the constitutional protection that this Theophilus case had given. Because the High Court had become more conservative because their quantum security ended up getting that out of the yeah, so that's very disappointing. And it's really scary about this because democracy is powerful. The fact that the politicians can sell it in the House and you can have the Heaven of the world, you know, David Lieberman, you know, Ken Aldred, someone feeding coins to the eye of the family set up over house, Frank or Ren, the title being some amazing slaves using the protection of Parliament. It's all privilege. And it's not, it really is a group of people that they can make the toughest defamation laws in the English speaking world after Singapore. And then they can go around treating whoever they like in Parliament with a full protection. So, I don't know, it's very disappointing. Now, in terms of what needs to happen in Australia, First thing is one of the awards. But I didn't get the award at the moment. I got the last of the legendary clients from New South Wales. Yes, you have the benefit of the council, you're an honor member of more than 10 people, but since I've been introduced in some of the questions I've been checking for, there's been thousands of victims seen, it's going to be amazing, amazing to see tonight. So I don't think that on the wall, I happen to know the other place, is slightly better ranked than the statutory situation here. But you think, with unified labels across the country, in the state of the country, the aid of national media, the internet, I think that the people that are having stuff made up there are actually learned by profession. This is fictional journalism. So I'm not. We still live out there. So I don't know how many there have been defamation laws. But this is, we have the American First Amendment, we have the constitutional protection, and then you only go down if you maliciously publish something, and you know it's going to be inaccurate, we haven't done any basic steps to fix it up, and then you're horribly inaccurate, you don't correct it. So there should be a system that analyzes that. It's incorrect and the scale of damage. So you can't just say, let's get rid of the speculation, because media can do enormous damage to people. I've done that a lot. People I've done a lot of damage. And people say, look at your trying to fix it up. But, you know, you can free speech. You aren't going to be able to say people, but why it always just turns into a monetary thing amongst themselves? Why there can't be a policy of correction or even some other form of benefit that can go to the trained person, which might involve hours of work or some other thing. So why are we straight dollars?
But the object of the bill is to provide a receipt for defamation. Of course, it's not taken order for the payment, for the plaintiff's cost. And that's the amount of the damage in order to pay for the plaintiff to seek $25,000. So if damage does not exceed $35,000, then there should be no cost of war. Once again, that is to try and inhibit the number of those actions taking place. There's nothing new in that, and it's got a very research from the Andes that I discovered in the top 10. Back in 1886, one George Reed, who was at one time colonial premier and also prime minister, introduced a bill into the New South Wales Parliament with exactly the same sort of idea, and those days I was going to support his shillings. And that in fact became part of the Defamation Act in New South Wales. 1901, I think, carried through a long, long time before it got lost along the way. There's no telling how to do this, but I would argue that if you can inhibit cost, the cost produced by plaintiffs to punish the defendant, and if you have the wealthy plaintiffs, then they will inhibit free speech, they will stop people discussing, arguing, stating publicly their views on all sorts of important potential issues in their community. And that really means that we do not have the full ground of knowledge that it's closing down. The defamation laws are a little more than an outrage. I would even start from the proposition who we need it in the first place, and then you may say, yes, we do, and then we should go to some sort of minimalist position. But anyway, as a sort of backbench LPNC, all I have to do is try and get some amendments through that I hope will reduce the amount of litigation taking place and give some sort of protection to people who want to stand up to the big end of town. That's really the issue to me. It's the big end of town being able to use its resources to crush up everybody else. I'll leave it at that, but thank you very much, and I'll have a good day.
Major publishers, their defamation bill for a year comes in the millions of dollars. One told me recently that their Murphy originally cost them $4 million for defamation damages and payments. And the thing that I think I briefly touched on in my study is that it's a very important factor. Because the chilling effect isn't even in the it least affects the people, it least affects the big media organizations. The Turkey and Britain has shown that they will take calculated commercial gambles. They will say, well, we'll put this dollar out, it will increase sales by a certain amount, it will cost us a cost of damages and cost of the two unions that run. The people who really affect the small publishers, particularly the book publishers, and like the England and particularly the three main of the world. So it's I can endorse what the said. I think we do need that.
The death, the developer issue is a very important piece in the community here in Washington, actually, that is Victoria. In my case, in the top, both have got 25, and I've got 8, and this one's got 10, and 5 got 15, about 15 months of revenue, and I've got about 15. So, quite an experience is revenue from 3 years of about 600,000, and 100,000 went from in legal flight to the benefit of pro bono subsidized legal advice or no legal advice, so I just put them in the self period, and I'm not quite the barrister, so that's not
I just have to give one example of the cost. There's a current case going on now, and the legal council is doing another legal council, not the area council, because the council is in fact, but the damages sought are $10,000. So far, combined costs of appeal. So if that was given, it would achievably double again. But as a manager of $10,000, we are looking at over $1 million. Now, the legal system that allows that sort of thing to happen standing is crazy.
And that's an art. That's an art that comes from
we thought it was
I've had a chance to verify
good part of our defense on the cloud, but I hate that the private mission engineer is trying to show me how to access. So we're trying to move into it, but I don't have all the things. And I was very good to see you on corruption and the law. I don't think that the thing like making laws is particularly high, but I think that seven making laws definitely do help corruption. I mean, you get the law policy, there could be an amazing number of oppression orders in South Australia. A good example recently was the issue of the active chairman, David Knox. And PLA had a great story about his tax partner. 20 years ago, he had gone down for failed tax evasion. Now, I was getting the threatening faction from the side as well, saying that I was being breached of the Crimes Act if my actions had been being thrown. Because of such an invasion, you can't have to be in front of the prison. So, how did this get out? Well, Labor, Bob Durbin, used Howard Castle to put it on record that Ian Coey, another former tax partner, had gone to jail. So that's an example where I think public interest is low. The corporate plot in Australia was in a two-man partnership with a bloke who did $36 million of a sales tax fraud, and then the sales value, public interest, mission low. This guy was trying to present the law. So there's an example of how it's can
work. As a former commissioner, Premier was sued by a developer and said,
so that's the question of defamation payouts being hit twice. Well, I think over the years, the power of economy, the developer issue, was arguably a tenant, and was arguably some of the early authors, some people argue, with the law about Union deals and chip wrapping and stuff. I'd love to have somehow written to the law so that some of these agree person who's done the wrong thing can completely go out there and not be counted out of the position, which is the principal reason why a lot of these papers don't, you know, refuse to run the college or oppression early on.
I don't have any problem at all. Of course, there has to be some kind of right to have attractions and corrections of it. That's what I had treatment of these workers through competing tools that you've reached some kind of truth.
Well, there's a lot of getting around these two publications have completely separate cases, which combined are the benefits, but each individually, the health benefits have a right of getting out of that maximum. Yeah, I think people, I mean, I've been a bit it's fantastic in how far they go on property. And so I only have one risk after a pack of bombs and one cell is a pretty admirable
Just for my question is two parts. One is applying language on change defamation law is that you don't have to prove actual damage when you're taking the defamation. Just essentially it's essential that somebody may be interested in you or your reputation may be lowered in the eyes of this reasonable person and so forth. My first question is, should that law not be changed to have some kind of obligation on the party taking the action to prove some sort of damage? And the second part is, what's your thoughts on the court awarding other forms of redress other than money, such as saying if you were to claim the front page article to the SMH, that the SMH must go to the front page article for your reply, and so forth, match life with life.
If you're understanding a certain angle quite right, then there's a risk of the bar rule that says you don't have to prove actual damage. It's almost like, I go to your house and I fall down the stairs and I guess that I'm injured. And I'm also guess that you might be injured. And so you can even have an awful human tragedy, and it's even actually an irrevocable presumption. So even if the other side can say, well, look, I can prove that absolutely no damage has been caused by the publication, then the law doesn't want to know that. It's a fear of what the law is here. I mean, I come from an historic rationale of the defamation which is based in feudal understanding of honor, which doesn't make sense in a more democratic and egalitarian society. And the other point is, I'm happy to see, it's a challenge for freedom of expression because obviously definitely is important because it's in more detail whatever I have to put down some kind of correction. But I'm happy to see that kind of situation. I think it should be, while they're forced to publish, it should be any right to reply rather than forced correction. No newspaper should be crying up with say what I'm not going to agree with. So it's all kind of right to try. The other thing is that the service and the
one trajectory of the speed of Christ case where he was sent to by one nation candidate, Ted Hickey. And the reason Christ went down was because Christ called him, a moon and down up and radio, like anything in this world. And this guy goes and produced a letter where he lost a contract with a security guard because of the controversy surrounding his radio station. And the judge is able to therefore see loss of employment and that magnified damage to keep specifically covered up before he pays because of that. So I think, and in my case, the lawyers of loss, I'm looking at what we call the lawyers of loss is best. They're going to have six people come in and say they read this and they bought the rest of it. And we have to say no one changed their opinion based on it. And only 3 or 4 people and in reverse of the police. So I think proving damage, from my experience, that has actually been quite an important part of their location when you really get down to the payout.
Yeah, I was interested in the case, which he claimed he was petitioned by a publication in New York and students to worry about this. I think it was up a lot of interesting problems regarding the internet, which is international. I wonder if you had any ideas on defamation on an international basis. What are you going to do about this? Because defamation laws are, of course, different from nation to nation. And I guess the second point is I've kind of lost track of what actually happened in the end. Is that case finished or
not a right for the city of Victoria, but the actual defamation action is still going on here, but it could think there's a right to sue, and then you have to find out whether the defense, for instance, sued. So, the important term that the fighting did is what already happened in the people on the right to sue. The author of the journalist involved has filed a complaint to the United Nations Human Rights Commission and that's all the people have received. There are various solutions. I mean, what the law has done is it's decided that people sue at a place where publication takes place, interpreting publication as a place where the communication is rich, where the communication enters the brain of the reader. You get this last situation today whereby if I give you a letter to read in Sydney and then you take it on the train and you read it, you can wait for a letter after you've crossed the border, then you've got to get it in another place. Even though that was another aspect of the team, like the policy of the people. The answer in my mind is to that the law that is applied should be the trade of the fact that a decision is made to publish. I mean, that's what the policy is about. That's what they're doing with the decision to do. So, in the case of an interval of being in the New York.
It really should be kind of more of UN style.